Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I want to welcome everyone to a 50-year flashback of wrestling at MSG Madison Square Garden, the mecca of professional wrestling, a building that every wrestler wanted to wrestle in. Today, we're doing a deep dive starting with August 30th, 1971. You may be wondering, why start with August 30th, 1971? Well, this was the first show John, Mr. Wrestling Arizzi, attended. This show started an amazing 7-year streak where John didn't miss one show at the Garden. And we will be recording one show a month to coincide with the 50-year anniversary. John has a long history with Madison Square Garden, starting off as a fan, to a photographer, to the Fred Blassie fan club president, and then going on to host his own wrestling radio talk show, and then hosting the first major wrestling autograph convention, which included some of the WWWF's former great champions like Buddy Rogers, Bruno Sammartino, and superstar Billy Graham, just to name a few. Now he's podcasting and the author of the book Matt Memories. Let's welcome John Arizzi. John, how you doing?
I am doing fabulous, Timmy. What do you want to be called? Tim. What do you want to be called?
Tim.
Whatever you want.
Tim is good. Timmy sounds like I'm talking to my grandmother.
I love Timmy, though.
Okay, you can call me Timmy.
Nah, it's okay, Tim.
So let's start out. Let's start out with your first show was August 30th, 1971, Madison Square Garden. How old were you at the time?
At that time, I was 14 years old.
I just found out there was an age limit restriction at the Garden back in the day.
Oh, yeah. You had to be 14 or older to attend a show in New York. It was a New York state law. Ironically, in 1967, when I was 10 years old, I convinced my father. I pestered him for many months. Please take me to wrestling. Please take me to wrestling. And he agreed in 1967. So he took one of his best friends one of my best friends. And he said, yeah, let's go to wrestling. We trek into the city. We buy our tickets at the ticket window. It wasn't a sold out show, close to it. And it was Bruno Sammartino against Gorilla Monsoon. It was a show I wanted to see, and I was excited about it. And we get to the entrance with the tickets, and we were stopped. We couldn't get in because I was under 14. So it was a devastating thing. I had no idea. And at the age of 10 years old, I was just devastated. And my father and his friend were like, well, what a waste this was, you know, going into the city for nothing. And that was a heartbreaking thing to not be able to attend the show. So when I was 14 years old, yeah, I mean, then it was, I was allowed in.
And how did you get tickets back then? How were they going about getting tickets?
Really interesting. I had kind of lost interest a little bit in wrestling. And then in January of 71, January 18th, Bruno Sammartino lost the title to Ivan Koloff at Madison Square Garden. There was huge coverage about that. And then Pedro Morales wins the next match in February of 71. But I wasn't really following it. I mean, I was just kind of not into it as I was as a younger kid. It really happened in the summer of 71. I was at a sleepover. It was a bunch of us friends from school at the time, and we did a little camp out in the backyard at somebody's house and pitched some tents, and there was about six of us, and there was a kid in the tent named Frank Favalli from West Babylon, where I grew up, and everyone's talking about sports and girls, and then wrestling comes up, and this kid, Frank, is like, yeah, I love wrestling. I go with my father. And I was like, you go to the matches? And all of a sudden, we just clicked. And it was so cool that, you know, I found somebody, because I never found anybody that was a peer of mine that was really into wrestling. So we just hit it off. And we talked about collecting the magazines, and he says he's been going for the last few months with his father to the Garden. And the next show was August 30th. And if I wanted to, you know, he talked to his father and see if I could come with them. And I was like, yeah, I'd be totally into doing that. And before you know it, you know, his father gets tickets, and I'm going to the very first wrestling show ever at the Garden. That really sparked my re-interest as a 14-year-old back into the wrestling scene.
So this is August 30th, 1971. It's a Monday night. Do they have a lot of shows not on the weekends back then?
Most of the shows are on Mondays. For whatever reason, that's when they got the Garden. And they would promote occasionally on a Saturday, but I believe it was when the circus was in town. And so there was a reason for them to go to Saturdays on those rare occasions. But the vast majority of the shows, 90% of the shows, were on Monday nights.
And when we talk about the tickets, how far ahead were you able to get tickets for these shows? Now, this first show, you're going with your friend and his dad.
Mm-hmm. I think he got him at Ticketmaster, and that was the end of it. I mean, he just bought the tickets on Ticketmaster, from what I remember. And, you know, we ventured into the city for the show.
Do you remember, even later on, just even going past this date, do you remember when they would offer those tickets up? Would it be like the day after or that night of at the Garden?
Traditionally, as I learned, tickets would go on sale the night of the show. Let's say you're at a show, and they would read the lineup card for the next show at the Garden, and they say, and tickets will be going on sale immediately. And then people would rush out and wait online and get their tickets for the next show. And they would miss, you know, 25% of the show that they already paid to come in and see.
Which is so funny to me. Maybe you don't remember this from this time, but what was TV like back then? Like, was the TV leading up to the Garden show, or was it behind?
Well, there was TV. It was on Channel 47 in New Jersey. It was a Hispanic station, but they also would run wrestling. And I wasn't watching it as regularly as I did in the past. And of course, as soon as I went to my first match, I'd watch it every week. But I did start watching it leading up to the night of August 30th, just to kind of see what was going on and who would be wrestling against who.
So this is your first time at the Garden in a long time. You know, you're 14 years old. Tell me about getting into the city, seeing the Garden from the outside, and then going in. Because if people don't know, this is not the first Garden. This is actually, I think it's the fourth Garden.
This is what they call the New Garden, which opened up, I believe the New Garden opened up in the late 60s. I had never been to Madison Square Garden before for anything. I was at the old Madison Square Garden, you know, not just the time that we were turned away in 1967, but when I was much younger, like 5 years old or so at the old Garden, there was a TV show back on Channel 7, WABC, and there was a clown that had, it was called Tommy 7, and he did a big, like, a show at Madison Square Garden. My mother and my aunt took me and my oldest sister, and it was just kind of like a circus in a way, but that was my only experience ever at actually attending something at a Madison Square Garden before this wrestling match in 71.
You're walking in 1971. What do you remember about that day, about coming in? Do you take the train in? Because a lot of people, if you don't know, Manhattan is an island. Madison Square Garden is above Penn Station, and that's why they put it there, because you can get there from New Jersey, from New York, anywhere almost in the country goes to Penn Station. So how did you get in there, and what were your thoughts going to his first wrestling match?
Well, it was my friend Frank Favalli and his dad, and we took the train in from Babylon, so it goes right into Penn Station. I was very excited. Since the age of 7 years old, half of my life at that time, I loved wrestling, and just to be able to go to a show was just, the butterflies were there. And I never forget going into the arena, and we had loge seats, which were section 100s, which were really right adjacent to the ring too. So those seats were really good. And just getting into the building and sitting down and before the show and seeing the ring, and I was just mesmerized by it. And the crowd filing in, and I was looking at the makeup of the crowd, which was a very highly concentrated Puerto Rican crowd, because of Pedro Morales, who was the champion, and he was from Puerto Rico. So I saw a very diverse audience filing in, and everyone was excited. And, you know, you hear people whistling in all different sections. And, you know, as the showtime was always at 8:30 p.m., too, it started at 8:30. So just leading up like 8 o'clock, and the excitement was building and building and building. And it was just kind of like, I couldn't wait for the show to begin.
Okay, let's get into the show. August 30th, 1971, 16,720 tickets sold. At that time, they weren't considered a sellout. A sellout considered over 22,000. So not a big crowd, but a decent crowd for the Garden on a Monday night.
Yeah, I guess it was about 60 to 70% full. And I didn't even notice. I didn't know, you know, if these shows had sold out or not. All I know is that it was exciting to be there. And when you hear that bell ring and the lights, you know, the lights go down and the ring lights are on, and you hear the bell ring, and then it's like, we're ready to go. And here we are, you know, finally, after all these years throughout my life, I'm getting to see a wrestling match live.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And here we go. First match you've ever seen was a midget match. Joey Russell defeated Frenchy Lamont in 4 minutes, 16 seconds. What do you remember about watching the midgets? Or, well, they like to be called little people now, but what do they remember watching about the little people back in the day of the Garden?
Back then, they were midget wrestlers. I mean, and the ironic thing is that the very first time I saw wrestling on television, it was in 1964. And my oldest sister, Linda, who's no longer with us, I mean, calls me into the living room, and she's like, Johnny, come in here. There's these, I don't know what this is. There, you know, as I go into the living room, and there was a midget wrestling match. They were chasing each other around the ring, and I was just kind of mesmerized, and I was like, what is this? And that was it. I mean, I was just like, I was hooked. And ironically, the first wrestling match I see live is a midgets match.
Perfect timing. It like brings you right back into where you were watching at home. And did they used to have a lot of those kind of matches, either midget matches or women matches back then at the Garden?
Well, no women, because the women wrestling was outlawed at Madison Square Garden. There was a law against women competing until they eventually brought it in somewhere in the middle of 1972, where they appealed to the State Athletic Commission. And then the ruling was changed. But the midgets were pretty regularly booked on these shows at the time. They were an attraction. They were an opening attraction. They were more of a comedy match to get the crowd warmed up and to get them into it. So it was purely for the entertainment and purely for comedy that the midgets were booked on these shows.
And it's the first match, so you're giving time people to get to their seats. Nothing important.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
Second match, Jimmy Valiant defeated Mike Pappas in 5 minutes, 29 seconds.
Yeah, Mike Pappas and Jimmy Valiant, I'd seen Jimmy on television, and I was immediately taken by him because he had this great charisma. He was this blonde-built guy, and he was originally a good guy, and then he changed over to being a heel. In this match, he played the heel. And Mike Pappas was a little guy. I think he was one of the smallest competitors, certainly on this card. He was a guy that was kind of an enhancement talent in a lot of ways, but he also won matches. So on television, he had this fabulous drop kick, and he was from a Greek descent. He had great flying head scissors. And so, I mean, him against Jimmy was an exciting match, short, about 5 minutes or so. And it was the first real match that I'd seen outside of the midgets. I mean, it was the second match of the show, but it was exciting, and I knew, like, all right, here we go. We got some great matches to go.
And let's go back to Mike Pappas for a second. That was a big thing that at the time, a jobber that could actually win on TV. So you're watching this guy that could have beat Jimmy because you've seen him win before.
Yeah, and because it's all new to me anyway, I'm like, I didn't have that because I still believed it was real back then. So, you know, anyone could beat anyone. So I was kind of like kayfabe. I didn't even know what that word was until much later on. And, you know, I think I learned what kayfabe was kind of in 74, 75. But I thought wrestling was real at the time. And as did my friend Frank, you know, his father would say, as my father would, what are you watching that fake crap for, you know? But to a kid, 14 years old, suspension of disbelief was there. And you thought that what you were seeing in the ring was actual competition. And I was no exception to that.
They played it off very well on television, letting Mike win a few times. So you get the idea, like, he can win. He may do this. Let's go on to match three. Manuel Soto fought with Mike Monroe to a 20-minute draw.
Yes. This match I remember, I mean, because Manuel Soto was another guy that was on TV pretty often. And I'd started watching and got familiar with him in the weeks leading up to the show. So he was also a fan favorite, especially for the Latins and the Puerto Ricans that were at that show. And he had a number of Garden appearances, as I later learned. I mean, I think he did the Garden over 40 times. 47, I think, was the number. And that tied Shawn Michaels with the most. Well, not the most, but he had 47 Garden appearances that tied with Shawn Michaels, who also appeared at the Garden 47 times.
Looking at the match, 20 minutes long. Seems like a long time, you know, compared to the other matches during this card. So 20 minutes, it has to be an exciting match.
Oh, yeah. I mean, back and forth, who was going to win, who wasn't. And Mike, the Moose Monroe, was a guy that was around for a while, and he certainly made his name in a lot of territories. He was also a guy that would win most of the time on TV, unless he was against a big name, if he was against another enhancement guy or preliminary wrestler, as they were known back in the day, and then he would go over. But, you know, when he was against a B-level or an A-level act or wrestler, he would not win.
I always love hearing about the storytelling back in the day, how they did that, how they stretched things out. And that's a great way of doing it. Let these guys win on TV. And if they're going against someone bigger, let them lose. But there's always a chance. So you're always giving these guys a chance just to squash them every week. So I found it very interesting the way to do things back then. Let's go to match four. Carl Gotch defeated the Black Demon in 10 minutes, 59 seconds.
Both of those guys, I saw Black Demon on TV wrestling. And the one thing that I noticed right away is he was a masked wrestler, but it was the face was cut out. And then I later found out, I was like, why is the face cut out of the mask? You could see his face. It was another New York State Athletic Commission law rule that you are not allowed to be under a hood in New York State. You weren't allowed to be a masked wrestler. And the rules were really enforced at the Garden, even more than some of the other smaller little venues that they were running at the time. But the Black Demon, and one thing that I noticed about him was I remember him from the mid-60s going by the name of Tony Nero. Prince Nero, because I recognized him. I was like, that's Tony Nero, because I remember him from the 60s. But on the other side, when you're looking at Carl Gotch, here's a guy that was on the Olympics back in the 40s, and he was one of the most prolific shooters in wrestling. He was a legitimate wrestler, and he had a lot of charisma, and he had moves for me. I mean, seeing it live for the first time, it was like a clinic of amateur wrestling while he was in there against the Black Demon. And it was a really interesting match, and it really started getting you more pumped up for what was to come. And Carl Gotch, you could just tell he was a legitimate star.
And wasn't the German suplex named after him, I think?
Quite possible. I believe it was actually named after Carl Gotch.
Carl Gotch, you know, that you were talking about, a realistic, you know, seeing something like a German suplex back then is like, oh my gosh, I've never seen something like this before. So it even means more knowing that he's a former Olympian and he's doing these moves that no one else is doing. So it is definitely pretty cool. Match number five of the night, Tarzan Tyler and Luke Graham defeated Gorilla Monsoon and Chief J Strongbow by countout.
Yeah, I was so excited for this because Monsoon was a favorite of mine, obviously going back to the 60s when he was a heel and had the big beard, and Strongbow, I mean, he was just a legitimate star. People loved him. Tarzan Tyler as well, because I remember Tarzan Tyler from the wrestling magazines, because I was an avid reader of the wrestling magazines. You know, I got my first wrestling magazine in January 67. So I'd read about all these other territories, and Tarzan Tyler was a legitimate star and champion. And Crazy Luke Graham, he was a mainstay in WWF in the mid-60s, and, you know, was in main events against Bruno Sammartino several times. So seeing these four in the ring was really special. It was like, oh my God, here we are. They're stars. These are guys that I just revered and loved and read about in the magazines. And I was just so excited for this match. And it was a championship match because Graham and Tyler were the tag team champions at the time.
What do you remember from this match? Because this seems like a really cool match.
Yeah, I mean, it was a championship match, obviously. Tyler and Graham were the champions, and we were all hoping that Strongbow and Monsoon would win the belt, but they didn't. It was a count out, and Strongbow and Monsoon lost on a count out to this tag team, these champions. And you kind of felt upset, as a wrestling fan. It's like you wanted to see the good guys win.
Absolutely. And this is going to be the next match, but it is not the last match. And I always find that strange that a main event match is not the last match. But was that something you used to do at the Garden? The main event match would not always be the last match?
It was always in the middle of the show for whatever reason. And I couldn't figure out what that reason was, whether the main eventers had to go on to another town so they get an early start. Or also perhaps that, you have people who have to catch their trains, because sometimes, the Long Island Railroad, even though it ran 24/7, it gets late, especially when the show starts at 8:30 p.m. So I never quite understood that. And then, of course, towards the end of the night, that's when they announced the next show. So they won't get people, a jump on buying their tickets for the next event.
So they would probably do it after this main event. Afterwards, they say, hey, here's what's coming next month.
Yeah.
All right.
Very, very true.
Match number six of this card, again, August 30th, 1971. Stan Stasiak fought WWF World Heavyweight Champion Pedro Morales to a draw for 19 minutes and 51 seconds when referee Danny Bartfield stopped due to blood.
Yeah, crazy. I mean, this was the main event, and there was no music back then at all. So you would just hear the roar of the crowd when Stasiak came out of the curtain. I was kind of surprised because it was in the middle of the show. It wasn't the main event. I think the main event, in my mind, would go on last. But Stasiak comes out, and the boos, just the crescendo of boos, because he was built up on TV to be the guy that could beat Morales, and he had the heart punch, and he was tough, and he was a brawler and a legitimate tough guy. And he comes out and the fans were going nuts, booing him. That's the one thing about the Garden where, you could start off with a midgets match and then you go into some of the other matches. But when that main event hits, the fans would be worked up to a frenzy by that time, because they know that they're going to see their hero, Pedro Morales, now defend the title. And Stasiak came out, and back then people were throwing stuff. I mean, there was always, projectiles being thrown at the guys. I mean, and it really took on a very serious tone when that main event happened and when Stasiak came into the ring. And then, of course, Morales, the roar, the crowd, the cheers, the people jumping up and down, the people surging the ring to try to touch Pedro and get near Pedro Morales. It was something unlike I had never seen. And that alone, that feeling, that excitement is what just kind of like hooked me. And I'm like, this is the shit. This is what you're here to see. And I was a Bruno guy. I was always a Bruno guy. And I never felt when Morales was champion, I appreciate him much more today than I did back then. It was exciting to see. You see the belt. When you see the guy wear the belt, that was also another big thing for me. There's the title. There's the belt. There's the championship. But Morales coming to the ring and waving to the fans, and it was just electric. It was electric. It really was.
With the blood coming out, was that a big thing at the Garden? Because you don't see blood anymore.
That's what worked the crowd up into a frenzy even more, especially Morales. Now, here's, the scuttlebutt is, and it really is true, that Morales never, in these days, especially as champion, never lost at Madison Square Garden, because quite frankly, the promoter, Vince McMahon, security, felt that there would be a riot and that the fans would, who knows what they would do if their hero, Pedro Morales, lost. And I believe it was some shots to the head, and he probably hit him on the ring post or one of the turnbuckles. And then the blood, Morales juice, they call it blading today and all that. But back then I thought it was totally real, and Morales is bleeding, and he was bleeding pretty extensively in that match. It was, and Stasiak was bleeding. I mean, they were both were bleeding. It was crazy. I mean, it was like they were brawling, and then when the match was stopped and called the draw, when both men were bleeding, it was just like, I felt there was going to be a riot. It was that crazy.
back in the day, it was just a different atmosphere going to a wrestling match compared to watching it like a lot of people watch it today. They don't get to go to the events, and they're more cheering than anything else. Back in the day, they were living it. They were living every punch with these guys.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And the one thing at this point of the night was like, I didn't bring a camera. You know, I'm seeing this great stuff, and I'm like, all I wanted to do was like be part of it. It just drew me in. It put something inside of me that I was like, I am totally, totally into this, and I'm totally in love with what I'm seeing. It just brought a whole new element to my life.
Speaking of Stan Stasiak and the heart punch, I know we're doing this right now, but in the future, I'd love to talk about moves that wrestlers had back then that are no longer around today. And Stasiak's heart punch was a big deal at the time.
Oh, it was. I mean, not only was it a big deal at the time, but it was also looked upon as a move that could potentially kill somebody. I do remember during this run, or it could have been in 72, that Bill Apter, who, you know, famous of the Apter mags, and, you know, there was a feature, you know, the night that Stan Stasiak gave Bill Apter the heart punch, you know, backstage at the Garden. And there was a whole article about that. And me just learning about, you know, who these reporters were. And I was like, oh my God, he hit Bill Apter. You know, it was in the magazines.
That's so cool. The main event match, Stan Stasiak versus Pedro Morales, went to a draw at 1951. But that wasn't the last match. Last match of the night was something I'd love to see even today. Terry and Dory Funk Sr. took on the Fabulous Kangaroos, Al Costello and Don Kent, to a 45-minute curfew draw. What is a curfew draw, John?
Curfew at Madison Square Garden was that the show had to end at 11 p.m. or by 11 p.m. That was the cutoff. No matches, New York state law, continued past 11 p.m. curfew. That's why that match went to a 45-minute curfew draw. But for me, that match was probably the highlight for me, because reading the wrestling magazines as a kid, learning about Dory Funk Sr., and then, of course, Dory Funk Jr., who became NWA champion. But Dory Funk Sr. and the young kid, Terry Funk, seeing them in the ring against the Kangaroos with Al Costello and Don Kent. I mean, these were legendary performers that you read about in all the magazines. And they're not on TV. But the deal is, as you later find out, is that because the WWWF was also technically a member of the NWA, they would get an opportunity to bring people from outside the territory in. And this particular match, I mean, these were like, it was like an all-star match featuring people that you don't see on TV. But you knew, if you read the wrestling magazines, that you know you were looking at true stars of the wrestling business competing against each other. And seeing the Kangaroos for me was just like unbelievable. And then, of course, Dory Funk Sr. and Terry, these rough Texans who are brawlers. And there was no baby face or a good guy, bad guy in this contest, because they were both considered bad guys.
Interesting. And this is Dory and Terry Funk's first appearance at Madison Square Garden. Dory Funk Sr. actually passed away on June 3rd, 1973. And going back to the curfew, so this went for 45 minutes. So I'm just thinking in my head, John, probably before this match, they announced the next card. And this is the time where a lot of people went and tried to buy their tickets.
Yeah, I mean, they immediately announced that there was going to be a rematch on the next show, which was scheduled October 25th, 1971. And yeah, I was like, I'm going. I'm going to go. But it was really just an amazing, amazing experience for me.
Let's recap the night if we can. Again, it is August 30th, 1971. The start for you, the start of a seven years going to see every show at the Garden every month. So let's recap. John, looking back, what do you remember about this show? How would you rate it?
Hey, it was my first show ever. There couldn't be anything better than it. You know, it was the best thing I had seen. Other than, you know, going to baseball games when I was a kid in the New York Mets, this was, and seeing the Beatles at Shea Stadium, let me preface that, that was another life-changing moment for me. But this was literally a life-changing night for me. This was when I said that this wrestling, this Worldwide Wrestling Federation match at Madison Square Garden was one of the most exciting nights of my life. And I was absolutely going to go to the next show. And prefacing and just in a little preview, the next show, I immediately took control. My friend Frank Favalli, I mean, We went to the Garden together, I think, for 3 years consecutively, every show by ourselves. But the October 25th show, I immediately went to my older sister, my older sister's friends. I think when that October 25th show happened, we had about 8 to 10 people with us. I convinced like 8 to 10 different people to come at that show on October 25th.
You were like the Pipe Piper of wrestling then.
I was at that point. My friend Frank is like, "You want to go again? Yeah, let's go." And then all of a sudden, like, my older sister, her friend's sister, and other people were like, I don't even remember the whole group that was with us that night, but it was something I said, I got to share this. I got to share this experience with my family. I got to share this experience with my friends, because this is something that I can't believe I was here finally. And I was all in, and my life changed on August 30th, 1971.
Absolutely. And the next time you'd be able to go see a match at Madison Square Garden was October 25th, 1971. Very rare that the WWWF skipped the month.
That's very true. I mean, they would normally be 4 weeks, 1 month. And sometimes they did a show after 3 weeks. So there was no rhyme or reason for it. And the fact that there was not a show in September, probably, and it was almost like a 2 month gap between the shows, which was really interesting and rare at the time.
Well, our next show for MSG 50, A Look Back, will be having Pedro Morales defending his title against Stan Stasiak in a Texas-style match. I guess they say Texas-style, John, not Texas death match. Was that a thing, again, with the New York guys?
It could have been a New York State Athletic Commission, the way you positioned what it was in a Texas-style match. Instead of saying Texas death was the way they advertised it.
All right, so we're looking forward to that. Again, this was August 30th, 1971, John Arizzi's first show at Madison Square Garden.
Well, Tim, I mean, this has been a pleasure. When you and Richie Garcia, who did the research for the show, I mean, I've known you guys. Let's preface it like this. I've known both of you for almost 30 years. Richie was a listener of Pro Wrestling Spotlight. You and I worked together at WGBB out on Long Island, and you were an engineer for Pro Wrestling Spotlight for a while.
Yep.
Do you remember, you know, what year that was? Because I haven't gotten it, you know, when I do the, you know, the Pro Wrestling Spotlight podcast, I haven't gotten to the point yet on the show, but I think it could have been somewhere in 91, maybe mid to late 91.
It was 91. It was definitely 91. I worked at Z100, a radio station in New York, until the end. I graduated college. I worked for them for the summer, and then I joined WBAB, which is the rock station on Long Island, in 1991. And we probably met around somewhere in 91. I'm thinking like maybe June or something, because when you had the convention for the first time, we were talking, and I was actually running your board at times, and you said, hey, would you like to help out with this? Because I had experience at the time running baseball card shows. My dad worked at Kennedy Airport. There's a gentleman that ran Yankee shows. So he used to be able to the Yankee card show. So you get a mission, you get a free Yankee ticket, and you go get an autograph. He used to have me sit with these players, you know, Lefty Gomez, different players like that. So when you asked me, I go, I'd love to. I love wrestling. So this is a win-win. So that was our first time we got to work together.
That was in 91 at my convention. That was the big one with Flair, Rogers, and the rest of them. How did you meet Richie?
At the convention.
At that convention.
At that convention. And he still reminds me, like, the first time I sat him with somebody, I sat him with Rick Rude. And I guess he wasn't happy with Rick Rude, because Rick Rude didn't want to really talk to anybody. And the next day, I think he sat with Ivan Koloff. We'll have to ask Richie on that. But, like, then he...
Koloff was in 92.
Yes. See, yeah, I thought so. I thought that they...
He wasn't at the 91 convention, but you guys met in 91, because Richie was basically, he was a listener, wasn't he? A listener to the show?
Yeah, I guess so. And he had met you, he told me he met you at the at a bowling alley.
At a bowling alley, because I did a promotion.
Yes.
Yeah, I did several bowling alley promotions, and Staten Island was one place that we did it, Brooklyn, and then out on Long Island. And look at this. I mean, here we are, you know, 30 years later. 30 years later. And you guys approached me with this idea and this concept. And I'm like, you know what? That's really an interesting show to do, because it was a life-changing thing for me. And those Garden shows were the catalyst to my involvement in pro wrestling. That first show on August 30th was a catalyst for me when you guys approached me, because I had gone to so many consecutive shows. I mean, and that was featured, you know, the Blasi Morales, and then you had Bruno coming back in to win the title, and all the things that happened at Madison Square Garden, that historic mecca of wrestling, from the years I attended back, you know, August 30th, 71, right through the time I, you know, was in college, early 77, mid 77, I went to every single show. So you guys were like, this would be a good show to do, just to kind of reminisce about what happened 50 years ago.
I'm sure at the time when you were at the first show, you were looking around, you said, I can't wait to talk to Timmy and Richie about this podcast in about 50 years from now.
Yeah. I mean, here we are, and we're starting out a journey that literally, you know, we're going to drop these shows, as they say, in broadcasting. This will be for our patrons, my patrons at patreon.com/JohnArezzi. People react to it and we get a good response. Why not turn it into a regular podcast that's distributed in other platforms? But right now it's a special bonus for the patrons of my page. And this is just a great honor and a pleasure for me to even reminisce about this. And I want to thank you as producing it, co-hosting it, and Richie for doing the research and writing about it. And also I want to thank a guy by the name of Scott Teal. Scott is a publisher at Crowbar Press, and he put out a book, which is basically the Bible, and it's called Wrestling in the Garden, The Battle for New York. I mean, it's a historical look back at every single show at Madison Square Garden. So I want to thank Scott Teal, because I use that as a reference all the time. And we're going to be using tidbits from that book throughout the series of this show.
Absolutely. Our next show will be October 25th, 1971.
Well, it'll be October 25th, 2021.
This is true. Our next show will be
cover October 25th, 1971, which was 50 years ago. Man.
50 years ago. Unbelievable. John, thank you for your time. For John Arezzi, I'm Tim Petrie. We'll see you next time.